We're holding on page Yud Zayin in Yevamos, Ois Lamed Tes. Yesterday we learned about David being descended from Rus and the whole controversy that was going around about it. Now there's eventually in Malchus Beis David you have not only Rus from Moab, but eventually you have Naama from Ammon as well. She was one of Shlomo HaMelech's wives, and in particular she was the mother of his son Rechavam and all the rest of the kings of Malchus Beis David from then on descend from her. So the Gemara mentions, in fact, in a few places that was Takawai, the Eibishter spared both of those nations, Ammon and Moav, as well as we'll talk about soon what Marsha brings about it from a different Gemara, that like this, the Jewish people should have been able to attack them and conquer them, but Hashem said not to. And one reason is because they had these pridis tovus, these two precious doves that are going to come from them, Rus and Naama, respectively, and for their sake, the Eibishter spared their whole nations. What? Pridis literally means doves, yeah. As far as Naama, by the way, herself, we touched on this the other day, really. I mean, it's a big question, what kind of person was she? Rus, we know, was definitely a tzaddikus, no question about it. Naama, it's not so simple. There are the psukim, when it talks about Rechavam, how he went bad, and he and his people, for a period of time, were worshipping Avodah Zarah and doing different other Averis. A couple of the Mephoshim say that actually what it was is that his mother, Naama, being from Ammon, had a bad influence on him. So according to that, it comes out that she's no great shakes herself, but for it, the rest of the kings of the Jewish people come from her. On the other hand, we talked about briefly, there's something from the Namami Fano, the Anaf Yosef brings it over here in more detail, that a story of how she helped Shlomo regain his kingship after he was thrown out by Ashmedai. And in that case, the Navi Megalgalus Hosayde Zakai. So that would mean there's some positive aspect to her. You have also the Arizal talks about in Likutei Torah, in his Likutei Torah, that is, in particular that Rava, he says, comes from a spark, from a nitzitz of Naama. He says that Loit has a that Rava has a particular connection with Loit. When Avraham went to save Loit and to save Loit from being captured by the four kings over there, he was helping because eventually from Loit is going to come Naama HaAmonis, and in turn Rava's neshama is embedded within her. Rava, the Amora. What the connection is, the Arizal explains, though he doesn't really make it clear where. I mean, obviously it's the Arizal, you know, but he doesn't specifically explain why Dafka there should be a connection between Rava and Naama more than anybody else, but that's how he says there is that connection. Anyway, so Dorash Rava. My dichtiv pitach to lemoiserai. We say in Hallel that David says you've loosened and you've opened up my bonds. So that suggests, in other words, like there's something binding, there's something preventing David from becoming what he's supposed to, and he's thanking Hashem for untying those. So Amar David lefnei Hakadosh Baruch Hu Ribono Shel Olam beis moiseris shehoyu alai. There were two bonds. Rashi translates moiseris specifically as straps that are used to tie a yoke onto an animal. You have a yoke, you have an animal, you put an ox or whatever, you put a yoke on it, and you have straps that help hold it in place. So now David is thanking Hashem that you untied and removed those straps. Shehoyu alai, these two straps that were preventing me, that were on me, pitachtam, you open them up. Namely, that you made it mutter for the women from Ammon and Moav to intermarry into the Jewish people. Rus HaMoaviv and Naama HaAmonis. Because those, you made it possible for them to marry into the Jewish people, and that all future descendants and then all the future kings of Malchus Beis David are going to descend from them. So David is thanking Hashem for making that possible in the first place by being mutter the women from those nations. Marsha points out, actually, you have the beginning of the earlier in the pasuk, Ani Avdecha ben Amosecha, and we find particularly Rus refers to herself. She calls herself in Megillas Rus, she calls herself a couple of times when she's speaking to Boaz, she calls herself Amosecha. So therefore, when he says Ani Avdecha ben Amosecha, he's hinting at the fact that he's descended from Rus, who called herself Amosecha, and Pitachtol Meisera, and you opened up and made it possible for all of this to happen. Dorash Rava, so Rava continues darshaning in that connection. My dichtiv, here's another pasuk in Tehillim. Rabbis osisa ata Hashem alekai. You Hashem have done many great things. Niflois secho machshveisecha elenu. Your wonders and your thoughts are to us, meaning they're for us, they're for our sake. So what are we referring to by niflois secho machshveisecha? So first of all, what's elenu in the plural? Eli lo nemar. Now, he's not saying it's for me. In other words, that Hashem has done tremendous things for me, but Ela Eile nu, but for us. Who's the us? Melamed shal Rechavam Yoshev b'cheke shal David. Little Rechavam is sitting in David HaMelech's lap when he's composing this capital. Now, the Pasuk says that Shlomo was king for 40 years. And then it says when he passed away and Rechavam took over, Rechavam was 41 years old. Which would mean, therefore, he was born 1 year before David passed away. So literally, David is able to have his little grandson, his little Enoch, Rechavam, sitting in his lap.
It's not
like
it.
No, you don't have a Nama in the story of Rus. You have Nomi. You're thinking of Nomi in the story of Rus now. Similar name, but no. Since Chazal tell us that Shlomo was 12 when he became king, then it would mean that he married Nama at quite a young age, and he already fathered Rechavam by 11 years old. In and of itself, that's not such a problem. The Gemara mentions in Sanhedrin that in those generations, people were able to have children at younger ages. Bathsheba herself, Shlomo's mother, the Gemara tells us, she herself had Shlomo at quite a young age, and then she herself had been born when her father was young, and so forth. The Gemara makes the whole calculation in Sanhedrin. With that said, though, Anaf Yosef discusses over here, again, given that medrash that the Ramah Mifano brings about Nama helping Shlomo regain his kingship after Ashbedai had thrown him out, and that was many years into his kingship. That was we have the whole story in Masechta Gittin, how he captured Ashbedai to tell him where the Shamir is that he needed for the Bis Mikdash, and then eventually when Shlomo was doing things that he's not supposed to, then the Eivishta gave Ashbedai the koyach to kick him out and so forth. So then it would come out that he married Nama only much later. So Anaf Yosef says maybe when the Pasuk says that Shlomo ruled for 40 years means before all of that started happening. And therefore, so that would mean, in other words, that then Rechavam may not have actually been born while David was still alive. And when the Gemara says over here that he's sitting with Rechavam in his lap, we means, in other words, that he knows Beruach HaKodesh, that eventually he's going to have this grandson whose mother is going to be a Gioris from Ammon, and he's able to say the Pasuk about that.
What was the story where it says Shlomo only ruled over his walking king?
That was later on. We'll get to it in a few months, Bez Hashem, when we learn Masechta Gittin. But the gist of it is that, yeah, once Ashbedai had kicked him off the throne, yeah, there was a period of time when all he had was his walking stick and his cup and whatever. Yeah, we'll get to that. We'll get to that later in this volume of Ein Yaakov, Bez Hashem. Okay, onward. So Malamat Shoy Rechavam Yoshev B'Cheke Shel David. So Rechavam is sitting in his lap. Omalei, and David is saying about him, Olaiva Alecha Nemu Shnei Mekroes Halolu. Shnei Mekroes Halolu. These two psukim were said about me and you, because I'm descended from Rus, from Moav, and you, your mother, is from Ammon. And if it weren't for that, and if it weren't for those psukim, then you and I wouldn't be able to be legitimate members of the Jewish people. What two psukim are we talking about? So the Maharshal says we mean one pasuk that says about the Ammonim, and one where it says lo yovi Ammoni, and the other where it says mo mayovi. Maharshal says that's a bit of a doichek. To say that. So rather, what it means is the two psukim where Hashem tells Moav, where Hashem tells Moshe to leave the Moavim alone and don't attack them, and to leave the Ammonim alone and don't attack them. So David is saying now, Hashem, you planned that far in advance, hundreds of years in advance, before our respective ancestors, before our respective my great grandmother Ruth and your mother Nama, hundreds of years before that, already the Eibishter knew that this is going to happen, and therefore told Moshe to not have the Jewish people attack those nations. So that's Nifloi Secha, Machshavei Secha, that it's a wondrous thing that you, Hashem, you decided that this should be done, that these women should be allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people, and you spare, and that you spared their whole nations for that sake. So Hashem planned this long in advance, Eleinu, for us, meaning for myself and for Rechavam. So you also have Edom and Mitzrayim. You have Edom and Mitzrayim, where with them it's both the men and the women, but only till three generations.
So it says clearly men and women.
In those psukim, it also says, yeah,
it says clearly men and women.
So it doesn't actually. So it says in by Mitzrayim and Edom, it says Loisasayev Adomi, Loisasayev Mitzri. So yeah, actually, we've talked about the last couple of days that Reb Shimon in the Mishnah holds that the same dispensation as far as the women applies to Mitzrayim and to Edom. The Chachamim disagree with him, and the Halacha is like the Chachamim. So Mitzrayim, both men and women, are also, they themselves are also to marry regular Jews, the Ger or Giyoris themselves, and their child. The third generation, Bonim Asher Yivold Lehem Dor Shlishi, are allowed to. So that's the Taka Chesed that the Amonim and Mayavim are allowed right away, exactly, yeah. So in this connection, Rava also says Dorash Rava. And again, you know, the fact that that Rava is saying a drosh over here about Nama, that connects very nicely with what we were saying before from the Arizal, that he has a ruchnistic connection with her. Anyway, Dorash Rava, my dichtiv, here's another posik also in that connection, in the same capital Mem. Oz Amarti, Dovid HaMelech says, then I have said, Hine Vosi, behold, I have come. The Megillah Sefer Kosov Olai. It was written about me in the Megillah of the book, meaning in the Torah. So what does that mean? Omar David, Ani Amarti Ata Bossi. So I thought when I was first anointed as king, now I've come. It must be that Hashem just recently decided that I should gain this greatness, says Rashi. I didn't realize that actually already in the Sefer Torah, from hundreds of years earlier, already from Avraham Avinu's times, there's already written about me that I am going, that I'm destined to have this greatness. Namely, because you have, when the Malachim come to Lot and his family and tell him you have to pick yourselves up and get out of Sodom as fast as possible. And then Vayismama, and then Lot is hesitating because what's he going to do with all this wealth? And the Malachim tell him, no, just to take yourself and your wife, and your two daughters who are found. So what's the Hanim Tzois? You'll have a pasuk where Hashem says, I found my servant David, and I've anointed him with my holy oil, meaning, so David says, now I understand the Megillah Sefer Kosov Olai, the reason why in the Torah, the Eibush to put that word Hanim Tzois in connection with the daughters of Lot is to hint to me, to Matzosi David Avdi. Tosfos actually points out that David HaMelech himself said that pasuk, but he said it Beruach HaKodesh. Marashal says, what do you even need that for? The fact is, the capital is captioned Maskel Eisan HaEzrachi. So it was Eisan HaEzrachi who composed that capital about David HaMelech. So you don't have to say that David is saying it about himself.
The whole Tehillim composed
the whole Tehillim. So the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra that David composed Tehillim al yedei asoras kenim, with the assistance basically of ten zkenim, and the Gemara lists them out over there. Basically, what it means is you have various kapitlach and Tehillim that were composed by others, but David rewrote them and re-edited them and whatever and incorporated them into Tehillim. We talked a few days ago about Tefillah LeMoshe, for example, where the simple meaning is that Moshe wrote it as well as the following 10 kapitlach. Although we learned that Takosiv had said that maybe it doesn't mean that, since the Pasuk says, Yemeshne Sen Behem Shivim Shana, and Moshe lived to much older than that. Maybe in fact it means that it's a Tefillah about Moshe rather than by Moshe. But you have a number of other kapitlach that are captioned with various people's names. But Pashtos, we would say that they composed them and then David incorporated them into Tehillim. So this is one of them. Anyway, the point is that, again, so this unusual word, Hanim Tzois, in fact, Marsha brings from a Medrash that when he say Matzosi David Avdi, Hashem is saying, where did I find David? In Sodom, of all places. Mashiach is also a Metziah, yeah. So the whole concept was found in Sodom, and it's called finding because, after all, they were going to be destroyed with the rest of Sodom, or that Moshe and the Jewish people would have destroyed them in their time, except that Hashem told them, Al Totzer Asmoyev. The Maharal makes a point, by the way, that when we talk about a Metziah, it means like something completely unexpected, and therefore Malchus Beis David has to be something like that. It has to be described as Matzosi, as Hanim Tzois, something that comes like completely out of left field, because we're talking about something that's higher than Teva, basically.
Matzosi David Beis means to Lord's
daughters. Lord's daughter was right. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so that's that as far as David and Ammon and Moab. Next, the Mishnah goes on to talk about that Mamzerim are not allowed to marry intermarry into the Jewish people, and as the Pasuk says, Gam Dor Asiri, even the 10th generation of them is not allowed to. So in that connection, the Gemara actually brings something where they ask Rabbi Eliezer, in a certain case of descendants of Mamzerim, would they be allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people? And Rabbi Eliezer says, the fact is, families of Mamzerim die out after a while. So in this connection, Amar Rav Huna, mamzera loy chaye. So Rav Huna says, a mamzer doesn't live. The Ibishta makes it that they die, that they die young. So what do you mean? We learn in the Mishnah that mamzerim are also, and they're also throughout the generations. If they die young, they don't have generations anyway. They're also to marry regular born Jews. A mamzer would be allowed to marry another mamzer or mamzeres. They're allowed to marry a ger or gioris, or an eved or shifcha meshuchreres, which are pretty much the same as a ger or gioris for that purpose. But they're not allowed to marry a regular. They're not allowed to marry a regular born Jew. So that's Isurin. The Isurin is Ras or Surin. The Isurin is Olam, and they're also forever, which means generation after generation. So for Rav Huna, if you're telling us Mamzerim don't live, then what's the relevance of that? Now the Orach HaNer and other Mephoshim question. I mean, the fact is the Pasuk already says that. Why is the Gemara even asking from the Mishnah rather than from the Pasuk? Gamder Asiri. So you can answer among other things. One answer that's brought is that this concept that Rav Huna says that Mamzerim don't live was something that was introduced in the times of the Nevi'im. The Nevi'im, he brings from a Medrash that the Nevi'im daven that Mamzerim shouldn't live so that Mamzerim don't proliferate among the Jewish people. Keep in mind, if a Mamzer, the rule is, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, in particular in Kiddushin, that Havlad, in such cases, Havlad Holach Achara Pogum, the child gains the status of whichever one of them has the worst yichus. So if a mamzer marries a giyotis, for example, the child is still considered a mamzer. He inherits that status of mamzer from his father, and so forth. So therefore, we don't want that to proliferate, so therefore the Nevi'im daven that it shouldn't happen. So fine, the Pasuk said, Gamder Asiri, because that was the Torah was given before the Nevi'im daven for that. But the question is the Mishnah, which is after that, why is it saying that? The answer is Amar Rav Zeira l'didim farshali la minei de Rabbi Yehuda, because Rav Zeira says Rabbi Yehuda personally explained to me diyadia chaye. When you have a mamzer who's known, everybody knows that he's a mamzer, then sure, he'll live a nice long life and then he can have children and descendants and whatever. People know that he's a mamzer, and therefore people will know not to intermarry with his family. De lo yadia lo chaye, but if he's not known, then loy chaya, then the Ebishter makes it that he won't live. Even himself, he'll die young, so that he doesn't end up marrying a ksheira, because he himself maybe doesn't even know that he's a mamzer. He's going to end up marrying a ksheira, and the result is you're going to have children who are mamzerim. So therefore, the Ebishter arranges it that such a person dies in the first place before he has a chance to marry not knowingly. And then you have in between, diyadia, velo yadia, sometimes you can have where he's known but not so well known. So it's not a clear thing. It's not a well-known thing. So ad tlosa dora chaye, so up to three generations, he and his family will live tfele chaye, but not more than that, which is why in the previous Gemara, when they asked Rabbi Eliezer what happens with descendants of a mamzer, and he says, you know what, they're not even going to last three generations. The Iyun Yaakov over here brings from a Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi also discusses this point over here, where the Yerushalmi says once every 60 or 70 years, the Ebishta brings an epidemic into the world, and one of the effects of it is to get rid of the mamzerim, the not so well known mamzerim, as we're talking about over here. The idea being up to 60 or 70 years, you still have people are alive and they remember what's going on, but after that, these things tend to be forgotten. The Orach HaNer actually discusses that Midah Raisa, the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin, a Sofik Mamzer would actually be allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people. It's only a Vadai Mamzer that's also. So he explains that in that light over here, this Diyadia and Delo Yadia and whatever, we don't mean where he's a Sofik Mamzer, because then Daraisa, he would be able to intermarry into the Jewish people. We mean, for example, where it's known, let's say, for example, there are Edim that he is definitely a Mamzer, but it's not well known to the general public, and he himself may not even be aware of it.
They investigate that nowadays? Not
many times nowadays when you have, the typical example where there might be an issue of mamzerus is with an eishes ish. You might have a woman who didn't receive a proper get before she remarried, and then the children would be mamzerim. Many times nowadays the rabbanim will try to sort of work around that and see if there's any way al pi halacha to invalidate the original kiddushin, and therefore to say that she was never married to her first husband. Then that's a way of avoiding the problem. If it's a kind of mamzerus from close relatives, which is not very common, but nevertheless, if it happens, then there's really no way around that. But yeah.
I have an idea.
What?
I
Not a bad idea. First, to make look in the context, maybe one
mistake. Yeah, back in the 1970s, for example, there was a huge controversial case in Eretz Yisrael with a woman who had been married and who had been married to a ger and then divorced and remarried without a proper get. And there was an enormous controversy at the time where there were rabbanim at that time who tried to claim that the first husband's gerus was invalid in order to be able to say that her marriage to him was not valid upi halacha, and therefore that there's it became an enormous controversial case. But yeah, so such things happen. Occasionally. On top of that, I mean, throughout Jewish history, there have been various times, there have been all kinds of controversies involving gittin, where a get was given, and the question was whether it's valid or not. We know how many complications there are as far as a get being kosher. There's been many, 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 many such cases throughout Jewish history where Rabbanim argued fiercely about the kashrus or lack thereof of a get. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara tells, "Ahu dehava b'shivavuse de Rab Ami." There was a person living in Rab Ami's neighborhood. Achrizalei de mamzeruhu, and Rab Ami made a public announcement that he's a mamzer. So the guy's going and crying. Look at that. And everybody's going to look down at me. I'm not going to be able to marry. I'm not going to be able to. So Rab Ami tells him, don't worry. I've granted you life because now that you're a mamzer yodua, then as we just said, you'll live a nice, long, healthy life because everybody will know not to that a ksheira shouldn't marry you. Whereas if I hadn't said, you would be this kind of mamzer delo yodia, and then therefore the Eibishter would soon have removed you from the world. Maharsha brings up in this connection, actually, that in Kiddushin, the Gemara mentions over there that after all, we know there were Jews. We talked about it earlier. We touched on it earlier in the Masechta. There were Jewish women who were captured at the time of the first Churban, and again at the time of the second Churban, who were raped by Goyim. And there is an opinion that in such a case, the child is a mamzer. We touched on that earlier in the Masechta. The halacha is not. The halacha is the child from such a union is kosher. But nevertheless, there was an opinion that said that they were mamzer. And the Gemara says, after all, how would we know? We wouldn't know whether hundreds of years ago our great great however many times grandmother. Others were in that situation. So now the question is, if you mean deloya dia loy chaye, if we're saying that people who aren't known to be mamzerim, then the Eibishter causes them to die, then how is it that you still have anybody who potentially could be from such things? So Maharsha just says v'yesh liyashiv. We could fan for it, although he doesn't say how. The Orach HaNer says, because he brings from a Maharshal, that there would be a difference between we're talking about an individual versus a whole family. The Gemara is talking about over here, you have an individual person who is a mamzer or might not be well known to be or whatever, versus you have an entire family that's known to be, or where there's a reason to suspect that they may be mamzerim, then what the Gemara is saying over here doesn't apply, and the logical reason would be, again, because people will know that, and therefore they'll know not to intermarry with them. All right. Further on, it talks about that another class of people who are not allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people are the Nisinim, otherwise known as the Givonim. So let's give a recap of the story with them. In Sefer Yoshua, it tells the story that after the Jewish people have entered Eretz Yisrael and they're starting to conquer, they've captured and destroyed a couple of cities already. So the people of Givon, the Chivim, you have the seven nations of Canaan, one of them is the Chivi. So yeah, they're the ones who lived in Givon and the surrounding cities over there, which afterwards all that became part of the territory of Shevet Binyamin. They got afraid, they got scared. So they decided they're going to send messengers disguised as though they came from a faraway country and come to Yeshua and the Skenim and tell them that we heard about all the Nisim that happened to you Jewish people and we want to make a peace treaty with you. Why they had to do it that way? So some of the Mefarshim learn because we have the famous thing that it says before they entered Eretz Yisrael, they sent letters to all of the Goyish kings in Eretz Yisrael telling them you have a three-way choice. You can leave the country, you can accept on yourselves that you're Shevet Mitzvah B'nei Noach and servitude to the Jewish people, or you can fight against us. The Girgashim famously we know left and they ended up in North Africa and the Eibishter gave them a very fertile province over there. So some of the Mefarshim explain that the Givonim realized that offer expired once they crossed the Yarden. So then now they don't have the option anymore of just accepting Shevet Mitzvah B'nei Noach and servitude to the Jewish people. Now it's Loisachayak on the Shama. So therefore they figured they have to do this. Other Mefarshim explain that no, that offer still would have been valid, but they didn't want it. They didn't want to have to be subjected to the Jewish people. They wanted to be able to keep their independence. So they played this trick. Kitzer Amaisa, they fooled Yoshua and everybody, and they made a peace treaty with them and swore to them in the Eibishter's name. Soon enough, they found who these guys are, and Yoshua tells them, don't think you're getting away with it. You're going to be choit ve'etzim b'shoy ve'mayim. You're going to be wood choppers and water drawers for the Jewish people and for the Mishkan. Now, there is actually a now fast forward a few hundred years to David HaMelech's times, to Shaul and David's times. So now the Gemara is going to end up saying that David made a gzera not to intermarry with them. There is actually a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos about that. Is it that we had briefly the Gemara had mentioned a couple of blot earlier? We touched on it in connection with a piece in Ein Yaakov that even after members of the seven nations of Canaan become gerim, you're not allowed to intermarry with them. So if so, then what is David adding? So Tosfos discusses. So one way of understanding it is that until then, that wasn't the case. They could have married them because they're becoming gerim after all. And afterwards, David, as we're going to say, as a result of this following story that we're going to tell now in the Gemara, made a gzera not to. The other way that Tosfos explains is no, it was always also to intermarry with them because they're still from the Shiva Omos. What it is is Yeshua had said they're going to be servants, but only as long as the Beis Hamikdash is standing. As long as there's a Mishkan or a Beis Mikdash. David extended that they're going to be servants forever. And once they're servants, anyway, nobody's going to want to marry them anyhow, but they would be also to marry them even to begin with, even Daraisa. Anyway, so now near the end of David's life, the Pasuk says there was a famine in Eretz Yisrael for 3 years. And as the Gemara is going to say, David was told by the Urim V'Tumim, as we're going to discuss soon, that the problem was because of how Shaul treated the Givonim. What he did wrong to them, we're going to get to soon. Anyway, so the Pasuk says, so Amar of Chana Ba'ada, Nesinim David Gozer Aleihem. The Nesinim, why are they also? Because David made a Gzera against them. Again, according to Rashi, the vort is that until then they would have been mutter to intermarry with the Jewish people because they're gerim after all. Whereas according to Tosfos, that they would have been also to begin with because they're from the seven nations, and just David is making a gzera that they're going to be slaves forever, unlike Yeshua's gzera, which would have only been as long as there's a Mishkan or the Beis Hamikdash. The point being, the Pasuk, the point is so like this. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Vayikra Melech LaGivonim, David called the Givonim, Vayomer Aleihem, and he says to them, and then the Pasuk continues and interjects, Vagivonim Loi Mibnei Yisrael Hema. The Givonim are not from the Jewish people. Now, in Pashat Pshat, you would say the Pasuk Pashat wants to remind us. You may not remember back to Sefer Yeshua who the Givonim are. Let me reintroduce you to them. But no, the Gemara is understanding that the reason why this belongs over here is because as a result of David talking to them and as a result of the whole story that we're going to tell over here, David made a gzera, they should never be part of the Jewish people. Nobody should ever marry them because of the bad midas that they exhibited, as we're going to see in the story here. So what happened? My time of gozer alayhu. So why did David make this gzera? So let's go back and say, Dichtim, by he rov made David shalosh shonim. There was a famine in David's times for 3 years, shana achre shana, year after year. Now, you have to, if it says 3 years, obviously 1 year follows another. So therefore, the Gemara is going to understand that it means that each year they're looking for a different aveira that's going on. And only when they failed to find anything, only then does David find out it's because of the Givonim.
Who's looking for the avera?
David wants to find out if there's a famine, if there's a drought, it must be because there's some kind of problem, there's some kind of avera. So we need to find out what it is. Shana rishona omalahem. So the first year when there was this famine, he says to the Jewish people, Shema oivdavet kachavim yesh bachem. Are there maybe people among you who are worshiping avodah zarah? And we know Avodah Zarah is going to cause a drought. We say in Shema, Va'avatam alekim acherim, v'yishtach v'isim lahem, you're going to worship Avodah Zarah and bow to them, v'chora af Hashem b'chem, then Hashem's anger will flare against you, v'otzer as Hashemayim, and he's going to stop up the heavens, v'lo yamotzer, v'goyim, and there's not going to be rain. Bod guvlai matzu, they checked throughout the whole Eretz Yisrael, no Avodah Zarah. Shnia omalahem, then the second year, he says to them, now we'll talk about after we go through the three things, why don't you just do all them all at the same time? You can't multitask. We'll get back to that in a minute. But anyway, Shnia Omalahem, the second year, he asks them, Shema Ovre Avera Yeshbachem, are there maybe among Jewish people anybody who is doing Avera, which in Gemara terminology, Avera unspecified means Znus. And we know that that can cause a lack of rainfall, dichtiv, as you have a pasuk, by yimonu revivim, the Navi says, the showers of rain have been held back, malkush loy haya, there was no malkush, whereas we learned back in Masechta Tainis, the malkush is the late rain that falls usually nissen time and helps fill out the crops, umetzach isha zoyna hayaloch, and you had, because you had the forehead, the chutzpah of an isha zoyna, so we see that znus leads to a lack of rain. Again, Bod Kuvalay Matsu, they checked and they investigated in the whole Eretz Yisrael and nothing, no znus. Shlishis Omalahem, the third year, David says to them, Shema poskit tzedakah barabim yesh bachem ve'en noisdin. Are there maybe among the Jewish people, people who have committed, who have pledged tzedakah in public and then failed to give it? And that can also cause no rain. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, Nesiyim beruach begwilun desintainis. Nesiyim beruach vegeshem oyin. There's clouds and there's wind, and but there's no rain. Ish mishalal b'matas shoker, a person who prides himself on a false gift. Poshet pshat, it means that Shlomo is telling us an analogy. Just like you see it's cloudy and windy and you expect the rain is going to come and no rain comes, the same way look how disappointing it is when somebody prides himself that he's going to give tzedakah and then he doesn't. But the Gemara in Tainus explains, and David is telling the people, that it's actually a cause and effect relationship. When you have Ishmis, Halab, Matas, Shoker, then it leads to the same kind of thing, Midah, Keneged, Midah, that the Eibishter makes it look like it's about to rain and then it doesn't. So Bod Kuvlein Motsu, so they checked and they couldn't find any of those things. You start realizing what a level the Jewish people were on at that time, and the entire Jewish people of millions of people, not one, and even though they still had a very powerful Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, not one case of Avodah Zarah, not one case of Znus, not one case even of people pledging tzedakah and not giving it. Now, the question that a couple of the Mephoshim bring up is, why did David have to do it one at a time? He couldn't multitask. He couldn't ask all at the same time whether they have any of these three things. So the Rif over here. So the Rif over here on Ein Yaakov explains in some detail that what you have is basically that each year something different was happening. So like one year you have there's not enough rain, but then at the end a little rain falls. So therefore, maybe now the drought is over and we don't need to worry about anything further. But then we see the following year we still have problems and therefore we have to check again. And then the same thing the third year. And he mentions also, the Gemara mentions in Tainus other Averis that can cause a lack of rain, but he explains over here, for example, once they found that they didn't have the big three that we're talking about over here, then automatically he explains in detail how that would include each of the other ones. So at the end of 3 years, we haven't found any reason that any Avera that should cause a lack of rain. The Aruch HaNer makes a different point. He says, listen, you know, the whole point is, even if there is, and if there is an individual person who's worshiping Avodah Zarah, the whole Jewish people should suffer because of it. Well, we know that, yeah, because Kol Yisrael, Reivim Zeh LaZeh, and people would be held responsible if they're not Moicha. Well, then, in the first year, we're checking around to see if anybody is Oved Avodah Zarah. We don't find. That means we've done our job of Macha. If there was anybody, then now we did a public Macha. We sent around the police and we found there's nothing. Therefore, we should think everything is good. The next year, when we see there's still a problem, so we have to look and see. Now there might be something new that we're failing to be moicha in, and so forth. So the bottom line is, it ended up taking. So it took 3 years. Arsha also points out, obviously, you know, he's going in order. Avodah Zarah is the most serious of them. Znus is the next most, and failing to give tzedakah when they pledged is the least severe of all of them.
So we just went through a whole month with no rain at all for a month. Is that because Hashem was watching us and giving it to us? Or because I think the whole thing of global warming is focused.
Well, look, I mean, obviously the Eibishter runs, decides when it rains. It has nothing. No, but okay, let's listen. But listen, first of all, primarily what we're talking about over here to a large extent is mainly in Eretz Yisrael. And we learned in Tainus, for example, that the Eretz Yisrael, the Eibishter gives rain more directly, and everybody else gets from the Tamsis. Everybody else gets from like the outflow, like the dregs of what comes to Eretz Yisrael. You have to also remember here, you know, we in New York are not quite so dependent on a constant rainfall as they are in Eretz Yisrael. For example, they're growing the crops and it's basically a very hilly, dry land. If they have a drought, it can be a catastrophe over there. Whereas for us in New York, you know, okay, so we go a few weeks without rain. It's not the worst thing that ever happened. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So the bottom line is they checked and they didn't find any of these three things. The Maharal, by the way, makes a point and says over here, why dafka would these three averus be things that would cause a lack of rain? So he says, because Avodah Zarah, obviously, the Eibishter runs the world. If people are denying Hashem and worshipping Avodah Zarah, then that's going to cause a lack of rain. I don't remember what he says about why Znus particularly would cause a lack of rain. And as far as poskit tzedakah, basically he says, because, listen, you're failing to give tzedakah to the Makabal, so therefore the Makabalim, the ones who should receive the rain from Hashem, are not receiving it. Anyway, so none of these things. So Omar, so now David says to himself, Ein ha-dover talui ela bi. Apparently it depends on me. There must be something involving me, involving the kingship. So now it's time to ask the Umatumim. Miyad vayivakesh David es pnei Hashem. So therefore, as the Pasuk says, David asked the face of Hashem to find out what's going on. The point being, in other words, that until now, when we thought that it was because of Averis among the Jewish people, that's not a time to ask the Umatumim yet. You don't just ask the Umatumim every time you're curious about something. Only the king can consult the Umatumim. So now that 3 years have passed and no Averis have been found, and now David realizes it must be something that applies to me personally or to me in my role as king, so it's time to ask the Urim V'Tumim. So what's a Maihi? What do we mean as Pnei Hashem? Amar Eshloka Sheshal B'Urim V'Tumim. That's exactly what it means, that now for the first time he asks the Urim V'Tumim. And how do we know Maihi? So my Mashma, where do we see, how does Pnei Hashem mean the Urim V'Tumim? Omer Rabbi Loza, ask your pnei pnei, because we have a zera shava on the word pnei. Ksivacha vayvakash davar as pnei Hashem. Or ktivasim b'shala b'mishpata urim lifnei Hashem. So we see that the Urim V'Tumim take place in front of Hashem, so to speak, and therefore he asks the Urim V'Tumim what's going on. So, vayomer Hashem, so Hashem answers back. The reason there's been this drought for 3 years, El Shol ve'El Beis Hadomim, because of Shol and because of the household, because of the family of blood, Ala Shehemis es Givonim, because Shol killed the Givonim. Now, so we know what happened was you had when Shol suspected the Kohenim of Noiv. So that's the Gemara is going to explain in a couple of lines, that when Shol suspected the Kohenim of Noiv of helping out, of being in cahoots with David and helping them out, then the Givonim were affected as well. So first of all, what does El Shol mean? El Shol Shol Nisbad Kalocha. Hashem is upset over the fact that Shol, when he was killed in battle against the Plishtim many years earlier, had not been mourned Kalocha. He had been mourned. In fact, we find in the Pesukim where David and his men were crying for him, and David set a whole kina on him. But nevertheless, it wasn't Kalocha. It wasn't in keeping with the dignity that Shol, a tzaddik and a king, should get. The El Beis Hadomim, and then when he said the house of blood, Avash Hemes Sa Givonim, that he did wrong, he killed the Givonim. So what does that mean? Where do we ever find Shol killing the Givonim? Because he told Doeg, whatever, to kill the Kohenim of Noiv. So he must speak in the Hemayim Amazin. Now they used to supply water and food to the Givonim. The Givonim are working for the Mishkan. Again, the Choit Ve'etz B'Shoy V'Mayim, and the Kohenim are supplying them with food. So now when the Kohenim are killed, now the Givonim lost their Parnasa. They had nobody to supply to them. That's according to Rashi. Maosha points out, wait a minute, if the Givonim themselves are drawing water, why do they need the Kohenim to supply them with water? So he says, no, what it means is the Givonim up until now had the schus of supplying the Kohenim with wood and with water. Now when the Kohenim were killed, the Givonim lost that schus. And that's what they resented, is the fact that they had lost that schus. There are actually Midrashim that some of the Mefarshim bring, that it wasn't only, as the Gemara is saying over here, that they lost their parnasa or their schus or whatever, but that actually seven of them were also killed and in the crossfire, as it often happens. You know, there's collateral damage, and here not only the Kohenim, but also seven Givonim were killed. But here the Gemara is saying it's not even a matter of killing any Givonim; it's a matter of that he had done this indirectly to them. So mal olav kosev kilo horgan. Therefore, the pasuk considers it as if he killed them. Now, a couple of Mepharshim also bring up the point. So why? So, a number of points over here. First of all, then why all these years later? And also, why are we focusing on the killing of the Givonim and not on the killing of the Kohenim? So the killing of the Kohenim and themselves, that actually Shol himself had been punished for. He was killed in battle as a result of that. But now the Givonim, the fact that he had caused this trouble to the Givonim, was still left undone. And there's a point that maybe all these years the Jewish people should have realized that the Givonim are lacking their parnasa or whatever, and they should have stood up for them and did something on their behalf, and they didn't. So now it's finally time for a judgment for that.
What's the story over there with the Nashol that the Givonim killed or something?
Well, that's what we're going to get to. That's what we're going to get to further in the story. Yeah. So first of all, the question is, the Gemara asks, Katova al Shol Shol Nisbat Kahalocha, V'Katova al Hashemis is the Givonim. It sounds like we have two opposites over here. On the one hand, Hashem is saying Shol deserved more of a mourning than they gave him at the time. He was a tzaddik, he was a king, he deserved more respect when he died. And then on the other hand, Hashem is holding him responsible that he killed, directly or indirectly, the Givonim. So why are these two things going together? So, and the answer is Ein. Yes, the Omer Shlokish, as your Shlokish says, my dichtiv, a posik says, Bakshu es Hashem kol anvei oretz, all of you humble ones of the world, all you tzaddikim, seek out Hashem and try to come as close as possible to Hashem. Hashem mishpotoi po'olu, that his mishpat, that his judgment, they have accomplished. Now, the simple meaning, in other words, is that the Navi is addressing the tzaddikim. You have always done what Hashem wants. You always repoil the mishpat of Hashem. So therefore, don't slack off on it. Keep on trying to come closer to Hashem. But Resh Lakish understands that it also means, Ba'ashem mishpatoi sham po'alu. When Hashem is judging a person and mentioning the things that he did wrong, is also at the same time, Hashem also mentions the good that he did and the compliment that he should get for that. So therefore, now when it's time for Hashem to tell, when Hashem is telling David, you know what, there's still this unfinished business involving Shaul and the Givonim, then Hashem also at the same time takes the time to mention the fact that after all, Shaul was a tzaddik and he deserved a better hesped and he deserved a better mourning than what he was given. Amar David. So David thinks through it. Okay, so we'll continue with the story tomorrow, Best Hashem, but one interesting point is we're going to mention tomorrow, Bez Hashem, that this was some 30 years after Shaul had been killed. The Aruch HaNer makes a point. The Gemara is going to mention that really the normal time for Hesped for a person should be within the 30 days after he passed away. So now, as the Eivishter often does, we find, for example, by the Meraglim, Yoyim Lashana, that one year in the Midbar, for every day that the Meraglim were away, similarly here, since they failed to make a hesped for him for 30 days, so the Eivishter was patient and waited 30 years, and when he saw that they still haven't done anything, then that's when we start having this famine.
The Kohanim was giving the
Givonim. So the Rashi explains that the Kohanim were giving the Givonim food and water. Marsha is bothered by that, because it's, at least as far as the water, if the Givonim themselves water? Are... Yeah. So in other words, the Givonim would be working for the Mishkan.
So how do you punish the Givonim if you
killed
the Givonim?
No. So the point is they killed the Kohanim, and the result was that now the Givonim lost their source of income. Now they don't have the Kohanim supplying them with food and water anymore.
They can do it themselves.
Till now, they preposterous, I guess you could say. The Givonim didn't have any land in Eretz Yisrael because their land had been taken over by the Jewish people. So they have to depend on the Kohanim to support them. But that's anyway, Marsha actually says that at least if they're drawing water, they can have water for themselves. They don't need the Kohanim to be supplying that. So he explains it means that they lost the schus. Till now, they had the schus of helping the Kohanim, and now they lost that schus. So we'll learn the continuation of the story tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem. Okay, Yom Yom Mashiach Ugo'ola, today is Chavav Cheshvin. Yesterday, by mistake, I said the one for Chavav, so instead I'll say today the one for Chavei. We know we have the expression Kol Yimei Chayecha L'Hovi L'Moisa Mashiach, so the Rebbe talked about there shouldn't have to be any interruption between. In previous generations, there was a Kol Yimei Chayecha, a person lives out his life, then he passes away, and eventually comes Yimoisa Mashiach. Now we shouldn't have to have that. The Geula will come take her from Yad Mamash at this moment in this place, so that the last moment of Golos becomes the first moment of Geula. And so that way, from Yimei Chayecha, here and now, without any hefzik, even if a person might be older than 70, he might be older than Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah appeared at the time and so forth, nevertheless, he still goes with the complete Shlemos into Yimos HaMashiach. The Medrash has an expression on it when it says, at the beginning of Sefer Shmos, when it lists the names of the Shvatim, Reuven v'Shimon Nachsin, they went down to Mitzrayim with the names Reuven and Shimon, Reuven v'Shimon Salkin, and they came up still with those names, Reuven and Shimon. As we know, they didn't change their names in Mitzrayim, but it also means, in other words, they go down and they come up as a Hemshech, one to the other, from our current life of Nachsin, on the lower level, right straight into the higher level living of Yimos HaMashiach. Continuing on halachas of muktzah, so we started talking about yesterday, you have kalim shemalachtan le'isser, for example, a hammer that you can move it on Shabbos in order to crack nuts or then similar with other kinds of things. Now, you have another thing that you can move it for, letzorech mekoyman. So let's say, for example, you have a hammer is on the table and you have to pick it up and move it because you need the table, then you're allowed to do that. Not if you placed it there deliberately before Shabbos. That's another thing called bosses, davar oser, which we'll get to later. But if you accidentally left it on the table before Shabbos, then you would be allowed to move it. And then once you have it in your hand, then you're allowed to put it down wherever you want. It's not just you have to take and brush it off the table and leave it on the floor. Once you're allowed to pick it up, then you're allowed to put it back in the toolbox or whatever.
You need the table or the place on the table?
The place that we're talking about, you need the place on the table. Yeah.